Monday, April 29th. LA podcast. Alyssa Walker, Hayes Davenport. Welcome back, Scott Frazier.
Thank you. I'm so thrilled that the telethon was such a success. I was basically on my deathbed when I listened to last week's podcast.
It was like Tinkerbell. It was like clap for Tinkerbell.
Yes, you clapped. I am back. I'm happy to say.
LA Podcast Army really came through this week. Scott blew through the 2,000 follower goal.
Yeah, Chariots of Fire style.
Up to 2,060, something like that.
I now reserve the right never to care again. I'm not paying attention anymore.
And now would be the time that we would promote our show at UCLA.
Yes.
On May 9th. But instead, we have to
not do that.
Encourage people not to sign up because there's too many people. We sold out in one day.
Yeah, less than a day. We were just like waiting for the green light to post the Eventbrite link. Once we got that, I actually put it up on Twitter before UCLA even had a chance, before Lewis Center and Maddie Brosen, who's helping us organize this event, had a chance to let their own people know that the link was available.
Yeah.
And you all really jumped on that. So congratulations.
Was that before or after you had 2,000 followers?
That was before.
It was even before.
Wow. Yeah. Imagine what would happen with all the followers.
It's good. It's a good thing we didn't do it later.
I know. It would have been madness.
So Maddie shamed me because she did suggest potentially a larger venue, Brode Hall, which I don't know how big it is, sounded really big to me.
Oh, you don't know how big it is?
No, how big is Brode Hall?
No, I don't know.
It must be enormous.
You sounded very...
I was like, no.
That's too big. So I assumed it was like Carnegie or something.
So what that means is we'll just have to do another show that's not at UCLA. But at rush hour on a weekday.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it's for the very local Westwood people that can walk there or take a scooter. And if you do want to try to go, you can get on the wait list.
Yeah.
And, Bart found something.
Bart's coming.
Hi. Bart got waitlisted.
You can get put on the wait list and then, you know, see what happens.
And if you are coming, make sure, or if you're not coming, get out of the way.
Let us know.
And Alyssa,
just DM people, Scott.
West Side people are probably wondering if Alyssa will apologize for all her West Side slander over the past
and
year.
And the answer is no.
Okay.
The answer is
we'll
no.
We'll see. There's going to be 120 people there, screaming mob.
This is the Big Questions live show. So if your big question was, will Alyssa apologize? That was thrown out as kind of a freebie. This is the teaser.
Oh, yeah. And so if you are coming, think of a really big question that you want to talk about related to LA, and you can come on stage and talk about it with us. You're going to write it down on a piece of paper. We're going to pick some, and some people are going to get to come on stage and live their dream of solving the city's problems on a podcast.
Most people would in this situation say there's no such thing as a bad question. I, however, would like to ask you, Hayes, is there a bad question that we should not be asked?
I mean, the answer, there's so many bad questions.
There's so many bad
questions.
There's
many more bad ones than good ones. So, but you know, people listening know what a good and bad question is, and if it's bad, it won't get picked. It's no big deal.
Yeah, it's not like a hands raised thing. It's a submit ahead of time.
Right.
Any DM Scott.
Yes,
I'm telling Scott. People to do that.
What are our LA stories this week?
Well, I just wanted to say I had a pretty great week. I feel like the dockless mobility program from the city of LA just kind of kicked into gear.
Boy,
and
it really did.
There's all of a sudden a lot more options on the streets. And almost every day this week, I rode a jump bike. Those are the red electric ones. And I've been carrying my helmet around with me just on the off chance I might get a bike. And it's changed my habits because I opt for that over almost anything else. So
I had the same thing, the same experience this week. I took I got to go to the Clippers game 3, and then through the miracle of them making it a 6-game series, got to go to game 6 as well. It was incredible. Hashtag playoffs our way. I loved just being able to show my appreciation to my favorite guys. But so I was up in Hollywood trying to get down to Staples. The traffic was horrible. So I hopped on a jump bike and I got to meet Sean, who I shared the tickets with, in the Hancock Park Koreatown area in like 10 minutes, really, really fast. We got in his car to drive together and crawled to Staples for the next like half hour.
Why'd you take the car?
I was meeting up with him, okay. But I should have just stayed on the bike.
Yeah.
So this is leading to less of an LA story, more of a LA podcast gimmick. I'm going to challenge myself to not drive for the next month.
Wow.
I am going to try. So like, I would say right now.
Do you know that May is bike month?
Is it really?
It is.
I'm probably going to bike least of all the options. I do really like the jump bike, but I like the scooters a little bit more so far. I would say right now, probably 30% of the time I leave the house, I drive at this point.
Yeah.
But I'm going to try and bring that to zero.
To zero.
Let's set some ground rules.
Okay.
My wife says that I have to wear a helmet every time I bike or scoot. I got one. Alyssa was complimenting me on
it
earlier.
It's super cute.
It's called a nutcase.
That's what I wear too. But not with
this brand.
Yeah, but not with the cool graphics.
It's a Timberline colorway.
I'm going to get the same one.
It's really cool.
Yeah. Okay, now I feel left out. All right.
Do you think, can I carpool? I can. I'm looking down the barrel of situations where like my wife, we have to go to Santa Monica or something.
Oh,
and
yeah,
I have to leave 2 hours early just to meet her there. It seems like I should be able to carpool, but no.
Yeah, I would say no ride hailing.
No ride hailing.
Yeah.
Carpooling is fine. Carpooling is legit.
Carpooling seems okay.
Or you could maybe ride hail if you always shared your ride.
That seems like a cop out to me.
Okay.
Are you the person who is like I'm carpooling, but really I'm just grabbing a ride with you and you're always driving? Like, you know what I mean?
You know from experience that I'm usually the driver in that situation.
Okay. I was
right.
Yes. So you're not like it's not the physical act of driving then at this point. It's whether or not you're being sustained.
I'm just trying to avoid being alone in a car or in a TNC situation.
Okay. And also that's kind of like a situation of last resort. Like if you're actually going with somebody to a place, it doesn't make sense to not go to that place.
Yeah.
Okay.
Exactly. Any other rules?
No, those are good.
Flyaway counts.
It's up to you.
I might have to go to the airport at some point. Flyaway, obviously.
I mean, why wouldn't you take the flyaway?
Bus.
Right. Okay.
This is great. I'm looking forward to updates on your like 40 days and 40 nights.
I'll track
challenge.
my progress. It's called the lived too long challenge. Scott, you were gone for a bit.
I was gone for a little bit. I went up to San Luis Obispo. So I actually took Amtrak up there, which was nice. I was on the long haul Amtrak, the one that goes from LA to Seattle once a day, the Coast mm-hmm. Starlight.
Yeah.
Which really makes you feel like you are in Murder on the Orient Express.
Yeah.
Like the cars are definitely from the 50s
and
mostly,
60s. Yeah. And so are most of the people.
Yeah. So it was fun. It was a fun experience. You have, of course, phenomenal exterior views of the mountains and the beaches, and it's really just an incredible look at California. While I was on the train, in classic thought experiment fashion mm-hmm. that I'm trying to bring back, I started thinking about what a Southern California regional rail network mm-hmm. should look Ooh. Like if it were built basically
good.
The way basically the way that European regional rail networks are connecting major economic hubs and
yeah.
places where people live. So I started doing that, and the only thing that was accomplished by this exercise is that I made myself and by the sound of it on Twitter, several dozen other people very sad because this is the kind of thing that is definitely not happening. But it does seem like, you know, when you think about how people get around Southern California, and especially when people come in and visit or have family scattered in the various counties here, it should be very easy the way that I did to go from my home to Union Station and just go for a quick trip out to a neighboring county. That doesn't seem
sure.
like it should be too much to ask
yeah.
or as expensive as it ultimately was. These are like very solvable problems.
Yeah.
And the main thing in the way is that our administrative structures do not regard this as a realistic proposition. So,
yeah.
Yeah, that was
I think
was
Move LA has sponsored they want to have a ballot measure next year that would electrify Metrolink, right?
Yes, the air
and
tax,
that would be part of the expansion. Would be part of that, maybe. I would assume it would be a better system.
We should definitely get into the details of that tax at some point because it is interesting. But yeah, for now, that was my big thought was, what if we could just like, what if we could go, you know, out to all the people going out to Coachella could just take the train.
They're
going to
try that next year. They said this year, but you know. Herpes.
What?
Speaking of which, speaking of infectious diseases,
that's a fantastic segue, Alyssa.
Measles.
It's back.
More than 1,000 people quarantined at UCLA and Cal State LA. I sort of thought quarantine meant like guys in hazmat suits kick in your door. You get sprayed with like a chemical hose, and then you live in a plastic tent for like 2 months. But it's
the NWT, right?
Yes, exactly. But it just means that you can't go to school. But what if you live in a dorm?
Well, what if you have a live show on the campus?
I am a little bit worried about this, and I did check my immunization records, but I think I'm okay.
And we recommend everybody else do this.
Yes. And yeah, no handshakes, please.
The State Department is about to put up a warning about traveling to Westwood, I'm sure. So
I think something like 5 people have been diagnosed, which doesn't seem like a lot, but measles is so contagious that I think they're worried about this just spreading like wildfire. So if you are a UCLA student and you get measles, it means it's very, very likely that you didn't have the proper vaccination record to go to UCLA. If you're a student now, then when you were a kid, you were supposed to get the MMR vaccination twice. So maybe it means that you filed a personal belief exemption. So is it fair to say that this whole crisis is the fault of someone or someone's parents that didn't get properly vaccinated?
I mean, it's. Seems fair to me. I don't think that anybody can say any specific individual is responsible, but I think that we've seen, and it has been established very clearly by the scientific community, that the only way, and it's actually kind of impressive how much progress we made in the course of a century fighting various kinds of infectious and deadly diseases, such that doctors in the medical community felt confident saying certain diseases were eradicated functionally. The only way that you can do that is with a constant and ongoing vigilance, basically, and that herd immunity that we've heard talked about so many times. So when you have a growing portion of the population that just refuses to participate in that, but continues to be functionally part of the society in every other way, it's just a matter of time until stuff like this starts happening. And it's really kind of discouraging. It's a major step backward, it feels like, for society.
So I was checking to see how we're doing now. So 3 years ago, California passed Proposition 227, I believe it was, that requires students to get vaccinated. It makes it more difficult to get the personal belief exemptions that parents use to not vaccinate their children. There's a website called Shots for Schools that allows you to check what percentage of students are fully vaccinated at your kindergartner's school. Would you like to hear the numbers at some schools? Would you even maybe like to guess at some famous kindergartens in the area?
And sort of like a Price is Right.
Famous kindergarten?
So they say that 95% is the standard for herd immunity, basically. So Ivanhoe in the Silver Lake area.
Okay, so I'm gonna go first, and it's closest without going over. I'm gonna say 73.
I don't think they'd let you into that school without the immunization.
It's 89%.
That's pretty.
Wow, she didn't even guess. I win.
Which, and that is.
I just can't. I just don't think they'd let you into that.
89% is pretty low.
Yeah. No. I mean, I can't. I'm shocked. Yeah. I would think it would be. How do you get into the school?
Personal belief exemption.
Yeah, but
the way they give these out now, there are like, it's not even pediatricians that you have to go to give these out. There's a guy in Santa Rosa who's a psychiatrist who runs an anti-aging clinic who hands these out
to kindergartners.
Yes, to kindergartners.
To stop them from aging.
Yes.
All right.
So are no, the bill that you were talking about eliminated the personal belief exemption.
Right, so that's
now
what I was going to say.
Medical exemption.
Right,
sorry.
Right.
Yes, the personal belief exemption is gone, but it basically comes down to the same thing now,
right?
Which is pediatrician frauds who personally believe that your child does not have to get a vaccination. I mean, I do wonder what the standard is now for, like, what the criteria that would make a child too vulnerable for a vaccination, but not too vulnerable to get measles.
Right. Yeah. No. Are there any other schools you wanted to hit up?
The Lycée, very nearby to, in like the Los Feliz area, prestigious French speaking school under the Shakespeare Bridge.
Well, I was way off before, so now I'm going to go 85.
This is too depressing as a person of a parent of a child who is kindergarten age.
64.
I can't.
You're kidding.
Nope.
Whoa. I was way off. All you
but
had
when
to
are
do
these
was
numbers
say
from?
Like one.
How current are these? How current are these numbers?
Let me check.
Because there was
64%.
There was a report. And
2017
then,
to 2018.
Yeah, okay.
So post 227.
Right.
Okay. 277.
I mean,
sorry.
I will tell you, as a mother of two small children, the first few months that you have a baby that you're walking around in the city, that's all I thought of, you know, and especially when you hear these reports of, you know, they're like UCLA the last week, they're like measles outbreak, whatever. And some taco shops in Glendale. Yeah. And I was like, well, I just went to the Americana last week. You just keep thinking of these things and you hear about how infectious it is. And you see babies have died in recent outbreaks. It is the most terrifying thing to take your kid out around the city when you hear this news. And I don't even want to hear it anymore. Don't even do another kindergarten.
Another reason not to do it is that then there's like an urgent press release showing everywhere you went that day. And I would be embarrassed that I went to like two different pizza places on the same street.
Like I went to two taco shops in Glendale. But I mean, those numbers. Okay, well, do one more because that's
Wonderland. Wonderland. One of the hottest elementary schools in the city, way up in the hills.
I love these kindergartens.
Where it's safe, right? Where your child will be nice and safe.
That's in Laurel Canyon, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay, closest without going over. I have won one and lost one because I was over last time. And you have given zero guesses.
Because my brain can't even process. Well, I have a feeling that you're saying it's going to be less, but that's also a public school. That's an LAUSD school.
It is an LAUSD school. That's right.
45.
No.
62. So it is lower than one of the lowest. It's really, really low. But I mean, like if you go through all of like LA and Ventura County, there's a charter in Thousand Oaks called Compass with 26% of kids being fully vaccinated.
Wow. This is crazy.
There are schools where like that's where you send your kid. Cowan Ave Elementary in Marina Del Rey is 67. Most of the schools.
Compass, is that a charter? Is that?
Compass is a charter, yes.
So their educational experimentation is what happens if you send a bunch of kids with no.
Most of the schools in East LA area, Southeast LA are better. A couple schools in South LA, 54th Street Elementary in View Park and LaSalle Ave Elementary near Westmont are both 72%,
right,
which is really, really low. Citizens of the World on the West Side is 66. Only 77% of students there got the polio vaccine.
What is interesting, and that is horrifying, just as an aside, but what is interesting is that when we're talking about like View Park and places like this, is that this seems to be indicative of a particular strain of wealthy Californian thought that crosses racial lines. Like it just seems like if you have money and you're like sort of in this upper class milieu every day, then you encounter this kind of rhetoric about vaccinations. And of course you have the resources to shop around for your doctor who's going to tell you that your kid doesn't have to have one. It's a very strange group, though. It's mostly affluent people.
It does seem to skew that way. For sure.
But definitely not just like the West Side and the hills. Like it's rich people of all stripes, I guess.
Yeah.
It is also, so I think it's also interesting to think about the actual notion of a doctor's exemption. So we've talked about SB 277, which said you can't just say I have a personal belief that vaccination is wrong. It's kind of unbelievable that was a legitimate excuse not too long ago. But this year, at the same time as a lot of people, myself included, were watching SB 50 go through the committee paces in Sacramento, that being the housing bill, On that same day, there was a second and actually larger committee hubbub that was about the bill put forward by Dr. Richard Pan, SB 276. And this is actually intended to close what they can, what the lawmaker considers to be a loophole opened by 277. So we went from having personal belief exemptions make up the vast majority of the reasons why people were not getting vaccinated for infectious diseases like measles, to once that was outlawed, then, as you mentioned, Hayes, we saw a lot of doctors who were known to be particularly friendly to giving out recommendations against getting vaccinated and have kind of just set up shop that way. So the intention of the bill going through Sacramento right now is to make it so that rich people can't just shop around and find a doctor who's willing to exempt their kid.
You'd have to go to the state, some kind of state health board.
Yeah, right. And Senator Pan is actually a pediatrician. He has a lot of experience in this space. So hopefully that experience wins out. But this is definitely a fight that it would be great not to have to be refighting again forever, you know.
Let's talk about this mural. As you go under along the 110, passing through downtown by the 4th Street exit, there was for many decades a mural commemorating the first time women were able to run in distance events in the Olympics. Is that what it was, Scott?
Yep.
And it was by Judy Baca. It was called
Hitting the Wall.
Hitting the Wall. And recently it was painted over. And it was a mystery for a little while. Yep. What happened? It was literally whitewashed. and then Metro came forward and said it was us. And there has been an ensuing kerfuffle. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, I would say it's fair to say it's a kerfuffle. It's kind of an interesting, it exists in an interesting space, I think, in the public imagination. We have, of course, been talking like almost on a weekly basis about the Olympics. There is a lot of, people have a lot invested in the Olympic debate on either side. There is perceived to be the potential for both tremendous good and also tremendous potential harm that could come out of hosting an event like this. One thing that has been pretty common on both sides is this harking back to the last time that the Olympics were here in 1984. And the symbolism of the city that LA was in the 80s and what that means for who we are now. Now you literally have, as you said, a piece of that history being erased. The Metro contractor said that they weren't even aware that the mural was there, which is interesting.
It is interesting. And I'm not normally inclined to believe this kind of thing. I do think it could have been an honest mistake.
Sure.
The mural was fully obscured by graffiti.
I think we still have to blame Caltrans here because if it had not gotten to that point, then Metro would not have made the mistake. Caltrans is a bad landlord of our land.
Oh, yeah. It is known
in
for sure.
The city of Los Angeles and other places in the state. And there are so many freeway underpasses that are in such horrible shape that it is not surprising in any way to me that they would have just let this go, especially a place with a mural that was this important as this one.
The mural was protected by some kind of anti-paint coating, so it could have been maintained against graffiti. I mean, it's always confusing to me that, like, when you paint over something, it seems like that would be it. But they can actually restore these things, may be able to even restore it.
Well, it's
now that it's been fully painted over by Metro.
It's this big mural coat. It's this, this anti-graffiti coating that they put over a lot of different murals all over the city. And there had been an effort in recent years to restore specifically these, or, you know, clean up and restore and take care of these Olympic murals, which were all over the city, which were super important. But yeah, I mean, I still don't know who is the steward of this. Maybe there's more people to blame than just Caltrans, but it was there and it was protected and it was being taken care of up until recently. So let's look back, you know, look at Street View or so. I don't know. Can we trace the decline of this?
They took a very snotty attitude about it, by the way, when Caltrans, when they were talking about maybe restoring it, Caltrans volunteered to put some money into fixing it. And they were like, even though it was Metro that did it and it wasn't us, we are nobly volunteering to restore it letting it go to shit for decades.
I just did pull it up on Google Street View, and there is actually a Google art and culture site site, site to all these murals. So it was, Spark was the organization, which I think first alerted it that it had been whitewashed, this, you know, art, local art organization. And they had restored it. It says January 3rd, 2013. And it looks amazing in this picture from Street View. So what happened?
That seems like, based on what it looks like a month ago, that seems like the last time it was touched was 6 years ago, right? I mean, it was pretty much fully covered in graffiti.
Yeah, and I mean, it is kind of interesting. I think that, to me, what I wonder is, does this cast on the discussion about the legacy of the Olympics and the things that we want the next Olympics to say about us as a city, if we're talking about not being able to preserve those things that are meant to represent what came out of having the Olympics before. Is that just a talking point? Is that somebody's priority to actually look back at 1984 and say, this is a moment of pride for the city and like these sites are of particular importance?
You'd think.
Or is that just a talking point in order to get them to come back here next time?
They would want to keep those looking great.
Yeah.
Can we talk about this Rick Caruso profile that drove me fully bonkers earlier this week? So this is, of course, from the New York Times. The headline is, a real estate mogul seeks to expand his influence over Los Angeles. We've talked about Rick Caruso a couple times on the show before. He is the developer behind The Grove, the Americana at Brand.
That new Pacific Palisades thing that is basically the same thing.
Yep. This is an article. The photo is amazing. Credit to whoever took the photo. It's a picture of Rick Caruso facing away from the camera out over a balcony, petting his dog in the manner of Dr. Claw at the end of every Inspector Gadget episode.
Is that like his office at the Grove or something? Like, I've been to that office, he has like a crow's nest type situation at the Grove.
Some of the quotes, one of the quotes from Rick Caruso in this article about how he wants to get more into politics is, periwinkle is the color Gwyneth wanted. Related to the sundries shop at his new beachside resort in Montecito that he is building. This article, the thesis of this article is very similar to some other articles that the Times has written, in particular one from last year, where they were lamenting that the LA Times was imploding and there weren't enough local billionaires who wanted to step in and get involved in city affairs. I think it was 2 days later or something like that. It was the same week that article came out that Patrick Soon-Shiong bought the LA Times. Lots of people do talk about that article as a catalyst.
Was Rick Caruso in that article? He must have been,
Maybe
just like glancing mention.
It was written by the same person as wrote this article. It was Tim Arango, along with Adam McGurney wrote the other one. This one is just by Tim Arango.
The billionaire beat.
Yes. It says things like, at 60, he seems poised to take a greater role in the city's affairs at a time when older leaders like Eli Bro, the octogenarian billionaire arts patron, are stepping back. Now eyes are on Mr. Caruso. In addition, others in the city are seen as filling the gap left by Mr. Bro and others of his ilk, like Austin Buettner, a philanthropist and superintendent of LA schools. Magic Johnson is another example. Casey Wasserman, who is bringing the Olympics to LA, and Antonia Hernandez, president of the California Community Foundation. Rick Caruso says, I wish there were more people who took a leadership role in civic activities, and added that he would be hard pressed to put together a dinner party of civic leaders if he wanted to rally support for a big initiative. We don't have that long list of go-to people to get things done that we used to have. And Mike Feuer, the Los Angeles city attorney, agrees with this. He says that there was historically an echelon of LA leaders with a very deep stake in the future of the city and a passion, a sense of philanthropy, people who were civically engaged. But there are very few people like that anymore.
Like what, the Chandlers
in Los Angeles?
What is he talking about?
That is what he's talking about. The rich people that really did used to run the city.
The oil money.
And more recently, Richard Reardon, the very rich mayor of LA in the 80s and 90s.
He's doing a lot, but
it's a little different.
We bought the original Pantry Cafe.
What we're engaging in is like lamenting the passing of plutocratic LA and its replacement by like only quasi-plutocratic LA.
My argument is that it hasn't even passed. This article does not mention Patrick Soon-Shiong, the billionaire who bought the newspaper after this author goaded him into it a year ago. You would think that would come up. Billionaires getting involved in civic affairs, the one that owns the big newspaper and part of the Lakers.
To the extent that it has passed, I just want to say, to the extent that it has passed, this sort of oligarchical LA of every film noir movie.
Yes.
It's not that those people went away. It's just that they have less power than they... It's like we live in a more democratic society. That's good, I think. I mean,
but there are...
Yeah, but do we then?
Yeah, I mean, there are still billionaires kind of... You and I couldn't go to city council and propose a network of thousands of miles of subterranean highway.
No.
And have to be like, that sounds actually really interesting.
And if our houses were on fire, we wouldn't be able to get the fire department dinner on our behalf. Okay, but I do think that, yes, relative to the like Wild West days of LA, where it was, you know, Huntington and Getty and whoever, all these people who had so much more power relative to the combined masses of anybody, I at least feel like the benefits of that have shrunk considerably, which is, again, I would say a good thing. I don't think that there's a case to be made that having a very muscular billionaire class is what a city needs to be functional.
Right. There's less opportunity for actual profit from getting involved in city affairs, like buying up parcels of land and...
Like engaging in basically the cartelization of land use, like Henry Huntington did.
But I would argue that the opportunities for just like the ego trip that comes from being rich and involved in city politics is still appealing.
This is Exhibit A right here, this article.
Yeah. it also doesn't mention Steve Ballmer, who has gotten really, really involved in LA politics.
In a very short time.
Yes. Is... basically like one of the most influential people, certainly in Inglewood now, that he's talking about building a stadium there, and is the biggest single donor to the city's new LAUSD parcel tax campaign. Just gave $500,000 last week. I think to not mention another billionaire in the city who is putting huge amounts of money towards like city stuff. We've got, this is all I'm saying. There's a problem with civic engagement in Los Angeles. I do not think these are the people that we're having trouble engaging.
Yes.
I would like proportionally, I think billionaires are easier to get involved in city stuff than
I mean, because proportionally it costs them less to get involved. Right. It literally does not take as much of a toll on their time or resources. I feel like, you know, in 2022, when Rick Caruso is our mayor and Steve Ballmer is the mayor of Inglewood, maybe we can finally get the New York Times to leave us the fuck alone. That's what it's going to take.
And when we have a built out rail system down the middle of all of our freeways,
let's talk about that.
The quote was so great because it was like something we did, something we are doing, and something we're not doing anymore. Thank you.
Would you like me to read the quote?
Please do, in your best Rick Caruso voice, or just a billionaire plutocrat.
No one knows what he sounds like.
He is a big promoter of above ground rail and believes the city's investments in the subway system are misguided. Quote, I don't know why we don't have a rail line that's going down the middle of the TED freeway at the 405 that's connecting the west side to downtown, he said. You have the right of way all the way through it. But what are we going to do? We're going to spend billions and dig a tunnel and just screw up the whole city.
He wants the green line.
Right. Yes. Right?
But like
in the silver line. Right?
Yeah. And the silver line. But the thing you must know is if you have ever talked to Rick Rizzo, as I have, the trolley is actually like his vision. The trolley at the Grove and the Americana is his vision. And he first asked if he could take the trolley out of the Grove and have it go down Third to the Beverly Center and do like a loop. And then eventually he amended that to include LACMA. So it'd be like a circulator trolley with the track. I don't know. Mm-hmm. He would buy all the roads or something. I don't know how it would work, which actually isn't a bad idea, I thought. Or was it like too far off from how the rail system was originally built? And if you got people like going the same places, they could go on their little, you know, dash bus trolley with real rails or whatever. But he has this thing where he thinks subways are really bad. And I didn't think from a cost perspective, but because he thinks it should be visible. And I did think that was an interesting point, like to make.
Did he? Oh, so he said that to you specifically, that he wants them to be visible?
Yeah, it's more like you want people to see, you want the people of Los Angeles to see people out there using transit and enjoying it and have it contribute to the street life. So I don't know what he's saying. I mean, I don't know if it's a cost thing or what he's saying in this story, but I did think that was an interesting kind of counter.
This is kind of like a pastoral sentiment that has popped up a lot in the history of rail development in LA back when the first ideas for Metro Rail came up with the like Wilshire to El Monte spine. That was a big sticking point was, why are we going to do subways when, you know, weather is perfect all the time and people should be able to like see where they're going and like it'll be like a fun adventure for people, which fundamentally misunderstands the fact that most people don't want a fun adventure when they're going from point A to point B. They just want to, you know, get there in a timely matter.
I mean, interestingly, that argument is not applied by these same people to bike lanes, which it actually does make sense for.
Right. Yeah, no, of course. I think that the added context that Rick Caruso has kind of like a Turtles All the Way Down thing with the Grove. That is his ideal structure of the universe. That kind of makes a lot more sense to me having read this. But also quoted in this profile is Jill Stewart, who we've talked about a lot.
Yeah.
Major Measure S supporter.
They referred to her as executive director of the Coalition Preserve LA, a group that focuses on urban planning and promotes transparency in government, which is technically true.
Super generous. I am sure that that is how Jill Stewart would describe them. She thinks of herself as being something of like a scourge of democratic values.
Yeah,
but
and easier to see all the corruption in LA from her vantage point in Calabasas.
Of course.
If she were actually in LA,
of course,
she would be like unable to sort of take it in as easily.
Who is supporting a Rick Caruso bid? You have Jill Stewart, who is a staunch anti-development person.
She's not supporting Rick Caruso.
Oh, she's not.
She was quoted in this article as saying his heart isn't in the zeitgeist of Los Angeles.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
So just Gwyneth then.
Yeah, just Gwyneth. She says she'll make the t-shirts.
So that it is interesting that he is one of the people that is being sort of cast about as a name who is interested in succeeding Eric Garcetti as mayor. We are now, I think, probably going to have Garcetti to the end of his full term. But also quoted in this article, Mike Feuer has been repeatedly named as somebody who's thinking about running for the mayor following Garcetti leaving office. It's interesting. Because he does seem like he's pretty pro Caruso, or at least he thinks
he would love to see Caruso in a runoff.
I'm sure
he would love it
running as an independent. Yeah, for sure.
Caruso is a Republican, like a registered Republican. He's like a classic Rich Angelino, like never Trump Republican.
Yeah.
And I think I'm sure it feels like if Caruso could buy his way to a runoff, that he could beat him. He could be kind of like a stalking horse.
We have to have like a scandal watch. It's so far away, but I want to just have like the heat check on these candidates as we go.
Right.
Well, let's issue a challenge maybe to the New York Times. Maybe this could be the next month challenge for the New York Times writers to write about people who might be considering running for mayor that are not billionaire white men. And maybe other people who have interesting ideas for the future of Los Angeles.
Speaking of Scandal Watch, some information came out today, Sunday, when we're recording this, about LA City Councilman Current Price of the 9th District. His name, you may remember, appeared in the federal warrant as someone potentially involved in payments from developers or some kind of like allegedly involved in illicit backroom deals. An article by Emily Alpert Reyes in the Times came out today saying that Current Price has repeatedly cast votes related to developers and other clients of his wife's consulting company.
This to me is this entire article is stunning. If it were somehow possible to divorce it from the context of the scandal that Kern Price is involved in along with Weezer, or at least named in a search warrant relevant to, if it were possible to divorce those two things, this represents an entirely separate stream of just like shocking corruption allegations. But taken with those other allegations, what, like, where do you even begin with this? The denials in this article are so laughable.
Yeah. I mean, okay. Well, do you want to read some?
So it mentions specifically at least 10 companies that Price voted on decisions related to them in the same years as they gave at least $10,000 in income to his wife, Del Richardson's company, Del Richardson and Associates. So what Del Richardson does for the most part is relocate tenants. So when a developer comes in and needs tenants to leave their property, Del Richardson coordinates their removal, essentially.
Yep.
I assume it's done in a very...
very tastefully, yes.
There's also... I can't even get into the stuff with him and his wife and his ex-wife and whether he was married to two women at the same time, as there have been accusations
It's not really part of this current conversation.
We do not have time. Yeah. But he says
big love has to wait.
He says that no, he was not. So with all of these questions about city council votes, what they point out is that the city council votes were unanimous in all these cases, which they have in common with every other city council vote.
I mean, like
almost all
one,
of them are unanimous.
Yeah.
So then you have to go to, did this vote pertain to developments in his district? Because what happens in the city council is, if it's in your little fiefdom, then you tell the other council members, like, this one's cool, this one's mine, this is cool, everybody vote yes on this, and then everyone does. You have basically total control over whether or not it happens. And it seems like a lot of these developments were, in fact, in his district. Yeah. There's a development called Park Plaza in South LA by a specific developer that paid his wife. There was a $1 million loan to the Crenshaw Gardens Affordable Housing Project, and the Retirement Housing Foundation that developed it also paid his wife. So it does seem like it's not just, he was just one of 15 yes votes on these projects. He was basically the yes vote that led to the other 14.
So think of these as 1-0 votes, basically. Yes. I mean, that's pretty much the way to think about it.
I mean, that is how it works. So what are we to take? Like, what's next? Is there an investigation? Like,
I don't know necessarily that there is an investigation in this, although basically one of the things we do know is that somebody who was formerly on the Ethics Commission thinks that this is something that should be looked into further and was quoted as such in Reyes's article. Kind of makes you wonder why they didn't look it up before. I mean, this has all been a matter of public record. So not clear if they just were unaware of it or didn't put the dots together. But there are definitely two things that are, I think, worth considering here. We talked about Mayor Butts, James Butts, down in Inglewood, and the scandal that he was involved in. Of course, no charges or anything coming out of that there. But that was the one where he was apparently telling bidders for the sanitation contract for the city of Inglewood that he would like his brother to be hired by the winning bidder.
That takes me back. Episode 2, I want to say.
Yeah. And sure enough, his brother works for the winning bidder. Totally unrelated. And I'm sure James Butts would say he didn't benefit in any way from that. It seems like a similar structure as here.
I mean, he benefited. Just like his brother's not calling it.
Not in his garage or whatever. Yes. But yeah, it seems like a similar structure as here. Kern Price's denial is saying that he's not financially benefiting from this, basically, or saying like this is not the reason why developers are hiring his wife's consulting firm. However, if you are related to somebody who is on city council, if you're married to that person, and you can say, if you hire my company, you will get chosen to do this job, that is both extremely corrupt and also similar to thread number 2, which is the Huizar situation.
Yes.
In which, let us remember just for a second that you might have said this at the top, that Price was named specifically. What appeared in the search warrant was Dell, not Price, but his wife, flight to China, basically.
Yes.
Potentially working with developers to get flights to China, which was possibly a benefit that came as a result of Kern Price's work or Kern Price's corruption as it relates to the land development scandal ongoing in the Planning and Use Committee.
Yeah.
So it doesn't seem really like a strong defense to say I wasn't doing this in order to benefit myself. There's so much other stuff going on around this. It just doesn't seem credible at all.
And by the way, even if it's not a spoken arrangement, just the fact that enriching your wife, developers might think could get them a more favorable deal in city council. You keep a list of developers that your wife is as a client or clients of your wife, and you don't vote on those projects, such as Crossroads in Hollywood, the big Crossroads development. Del Richardson is a relocation consultant for that project.
One of the biggest, like most contentious tenant,
huge,
you know, relocation projects happening.
Curran Price did not vote on that one. He recused himself because his wife was a consultant on the project. That to me is kind of damning, shows that you know that you're not supposed to be doing this, but why did you do it all the other times? I think it's also notable that Crossroads, that one is not in his district.
Right.
So to me, this seems, and I think that there is an even broader question here, which is about the way that business is done in City Hall. Like if we're saying that these are 1-0 votes basically in the council where it's like it's in his district, so whatever he wants to do is fine. Yeah. How believable is it that something like this would not be common knowledge among the other council members? And then I feel like the quote from Levinson in Reyes's story is that at a minimum, this is going to erode public trust.
Yeah.
And I would say that that is 100% true, because how do you really think that or I should say, why do we think that Curran Price would be getting this kind of treatment from the other members on the council if it were not somewhat more widespread than what we're aware of? You know, like that. It
That's
doesn't
right.
seem to me like they would just be so invested in Del Richardson's career that they would be willing to just do whatever Curran Price said only in these cases. It seems like there is a large story of corruption that is yet to be told. So
let's talk a little bit about this article, another LA Times article by Jacqueline Cosgrove about the Woolsey fire in the Malibu area. LA Fire Department officials are saying that there was actually like a pretty big obstacle in fighting the Woolsey fire. There was the wind, there was obviously the dry vegetation, and there was also politicians, local politicians, calling them and telling them to go to specific addresses to put out those houses first.
Yeah.
This would have been LA County Fire Department, right? Just so to clarify, because it was in Malibu, correct?
Yeah, you remember when this fire was going on. This was when we saw people popping up at Board of Supervisors meetings and saying, this is the worst fire I've ever seen in Malibu. And as, you know, Pierce Brosnan and I...
Something that people say when they should have moved.
Right. Yes. Yes, indeed. But yeah, so there was a lot of behind-the-scenes influence peddling in an arena where you really would expect there shouldn't be any. The exigencies of fighting wildfires, particularly the seventh largest in the history of the state, being what they are, one would imagine that you should probably leave it to the professionals.
One, you should probably leave. Two, you should not be standing there to monitor how quickly the firefighters are arriving at your property, because you should be gone. But then this was the same thing the weeks after the fires at these Malibu City Council and other meetings, people standing up and saying, you didn't do a good enough job saving my house
to the
fire captain, all these other people who were there. And you just wanted to be like, they are not there to save your house. They are there to save your life. You are alive. Next speaker.
You're welcome.
We can't really assume that they were there waiting to see how long it took the firefighters, because what is a Ring doorbell for?
to watch the fire truck shows up.
There are no names named either of the politicians or the celebrities.
Which makes me think
involved.
The fire department's budget's pretty safe for next year. The politicians will be taking care of them, so their names don't get leaked.
Right.
But, oh God, I want names.
Me
I
too.
Want the celebrities' names who exactly who they called. I want to hear the phone conversations. Oh, I want it all. Also, we're suing SoCal Edison, the utility.
Yeah.
Who's we?
The county.
The county.
Sheila Kuehl. I always want to say Sheila Kuehl because she is cool. But they introduced a motion, or I don't know, a lawsuit. I don't know how they do it. I don't know how they do it at the county soups. But we are going to sue them because they didn't take care of the conditions that
led to the Woolsey
fire. Yeah.
And this is a major thing. I don't know what the magnitude of the damage is here relative to up north, but obviously anybody who's been paying attention to California state politics over the course of the last year knows that the PG&E bankruptcy in Northern California has been a huge deal, still ongoing. The liabilities in cases like this are potentially existential for a private utility. So I do think it is great that we're holding accountable the stewards, the people who should be stewarding the integrity of our infrastructure. So good work, county.
Did you see the thing that we also are maybe planning that Edison is possibly just going to, or PG&E, I think, is going to shut off power during dangerous fire days?
This is a thing that they talk about doing all the time. I mean, it's something that they said should have happened during the campfire, which was in Paradise, that they like proactively just shut down power lines that are, you know, servicing communities, knowing that the infrastructure is so old and poorly maintained that it might cause a fire. So it has been something that's been talked about and that's been done in other places. And I think now if we going into this fire season, which will probably start like next week, it is like a preventative measure that is probably going to be taken. I would assume they would take a measure like that this summer after everything that happened last summer.
I was really hoping for April rains this year. That would have done a lot.
There's a chance of rain tonight.
Okay.
Well, tomorrow, like last night.
Hayes doesn't seem comforted by that.
I mean, like,
you wanted April showers?
Well, because that does a lot to moisten things up.
Right. Without causing like a super bloom that will then burn.
Yeah. Really, really bad.
I mean, it's already done. The mustard, it's already a done deal.
The really bad fire year was after the incredibly heavy rains in January and then the totally dry February, March. Yeah. And we had a lot of rain in February, not a ton in March, and nothing in April. So it's not, things are not as...
Just months of drying out is where you...
Yeah, that's where you really get into trouble after lots of rain. Thank you for listening to LA Podcast. We are coming to UCLA. Thank you so much to everyone who responded. And we will also be back in podcast form next week. Bye-bye.